You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Well, last episode we were together, you know, I went straight into the question.
Yeah.
And I surprised you.
You did. It was like mad skills there.
So I was trying to do the intro to see if I could, you know, take you off your game this time. But nevertheless, it's ingrained and, you know, you love to interrupt. But you know what? Be sure to go to newchurches.com and download our recent research report, Multiplication Today, Movements Tomorrow, Practices, Barriers, and an Ecosystem. And by this time, the Canadian version of our State of Church Planning Report should be live as well. So you can get that at newchurches.com.
You should sing it with me. You know the song. I know
yes,
the lyrics.
Of course. Well, we regularly sing it at our dinner table.
Seriously?
Okay, not regularly, but in the past
just
month,
you want
a couple
your kids
times.
To be Canadian and keep
well,
that
my
value.
Son will probably not think he is. Right, because he's two right now, and we moved when he was like 6 months.
And he's going to think that I grew up in a place where Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Yes,
are the
that is going to be normal for him.
Yes, my daughter says to me recently. She just turned 18. She says, "So this is the first election I get to vote in. This is the one."
That's okay, awesome.
So are you going to maintain citizenship for your kids in Canada, or are you going to naturalize them? I guess they have to make that choice later.
It's a little bit too early to tell.
Oh, sounds like, you know, we got enough of you Canadians. We got Justin Bieber. We're still upset about the Justin Bieber thing. Can you take him back? So, all right. So my wife, of course, is she's a naturalized citizen, but Canada doesn't recognize Canada says she's still a Canadian citizen.
Yeah.
Which means my daughters have Canadian citizenship.
Okay.
Which why
so
my
you
daughter.
So you filed that for them?
My daughter. Well, we're waiting because she's going to, my daughter, my oldest daughter, because you don't have to claim it. You have to acknowledge it or receive it, right? So my daughter is starting Wheaton, you know, so she's going to do her undergrad at Wheaton.
Yep.
And she's going to go to McGill for her master's degree, but she's going to go and receive her citizenship that she already has in Quebec. So she's Quebecois.
Yeah.
And then she'd go to McGill for like $4 a year.
Yes,
like,
it is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
It's less than, I'm pretty sure it's less than $2,000-$3,000.
It's crazy. And that's Canadian dollars. Yeah, so that's worth like $8 US.
Okay. Well, this is not the topic of
McGill.
Our podcast.
And you know who goes to McGill? You know who's at McGill?
Who?
Glenn Smith.
Yes, that's right.
Christian Direction.
Yeah.
That's the right. Amazing.
I mean,
Glenn
Smith. He is. Nope. The real deal.
The real
in
deal.
Canada.
And so we've had him do stuff. I've done stuff with him on the blog, The Exchange.
Yeah.
We should have him on the podcast. He was on my TV show.
Yeah, we should.
So we'll
schedule
that out.
We
don't do guests on the podcast, do we? Sorry, we don't do guests.
No, I mean, we could do it on the webinar, on our New Churches Plus member stuff.
Yeah. Oh, the New Churches Plus members webinar. Let's do it there. See how I work that in?
I like your salesman voice.
Yes, I just kind of go into it.
Anytime we have to endure.
This is LifeWeb. So I have to, let's do it on the New Churches Plus members.
Yes.
So
back to the podcast. Today's question is from Bryant Lee, and this one's related to the multi-ethnic church. And one of the reasons he submitted this is because a couple months ago, we did a giveaway for tickets to the upcoming multi-ethnic Mosaics conference that both of us are going to be speaking at. So you can learn more about that at Mosaics.
You can learn more about that at Mosaics. What is the website?
Yeah, it's. We'll get it in the show notes.
Okay.
Something Mosaics 2016 is going to be up there.
MarkDemaz.com. It's Mosaics, MOSAIX 2016.com. So you're speaking.
Yeah, and you are as well. And on multi-ethnic leadership, discipleship.
All right, I have to tell you what happened last time we were there.
Okay.
So last time we were there, it was great. It was a great time because actually I got to play the apology.
The piano?
No. Be quiet and listen. I got to play the apology. I don't know if you knew this, but, you know, LifeWay publicly apologized for the rickshaw rally. Right? I'm sure that before you came to LifeWay, some of your friends shared that with you. Did you know about that before?
Up in Canada, we don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You were doing busy other things. Well, the rickshaw rally was a kind of a... accidentally, I mean, no one did this on purpose, but nevertheless, it's still real. It had culturally insensitive and stereotypical things. I mean, really, you don't want to appropriate someone else's culture for a VBS lesson, right? So rickshaw rally might, in and of itself, the title might say, this could go badly. And so, over the years, been an issue. And so Tom Rayner, president of LifeWay, recorded a video, which I talked to the Mark and I said, listen, I want to do something a little different. I know I'm speaking. Let me show this here at this thing. Let me talk. And so, so Tom shared it.
Okay.
And I played the video and I shared afterwards, and it was really kind of a neat
thing. Oh, that's cool.
And so anyway, so that became kind of a moment of, I think, clarity that was real helpful. So, but then, I was speaking and I was speaking on cross-cultural miscommunication, and there was a group there from the Congo or Congo. And, there's a big civil war there right now. Yeah. And one of the bloodiest in the world. And they had just then come up to, and subsequently have been some setbacks, but they just come up to a peace. So they brought up the delegation, and it was so funny because I was going to talk on cross-cultural communication using what's called a modified Burroughs communication theory. So, and I know it sounds boring, but it's actually pretty cool. But the guy gets up before me, and this is the guy from Africa, Congo. And he says, listen, he holds up his hand, says, there are five things. Now put your hands up with me. Five things. Everyone holds up five things and says, but maybe they're just four. So let's just say four. Right. So he goes to four and then he goes to three. But what he does it is he's like picking one finger at a time. And then finally he says, there's one. And he said, everyone just hold up one finger. And it's the middle finger. Right. So you've got this whole room of people who were with him until
this is his 10-minute talk.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it's amazing. So but he wasn't doing it on purpose.
OK.
So he's holding up the middle finger, both middle fingers in front of 1,000 people.
I hope right? There was a meme taken.
Oh, it was so awesome. And it was like, and he wants everyone else to put it up, and everyone's like putting their hands down. It's all awkward. So I get to get up right afterward and say, sometimes things mean different things in one culture to another.
What a great intro.
Oh, it was like, thank you, Lord. I think it wasn't to me. I think Christina Cleveland
that
was right
is
before
awesome.
Me.
Awesome.
But it was really great. So, but that's always a great conference. And this year promises to be significant. And so yeah. I want to encourage people to come, and I put on my promotion voice. I want to encourage people to come and be part of the multi-ethnic church conference.
And newchurches.com, we're going to be live streaming this as well in case you can't make it.
Oh, okay, good. I didn't know we were doing that. Yeah. I'm actually flying back from London. I land at 10 a.m. that morning so I can be there near the end of the conference. So I'm super excited about it. So
well, at least it's not like a 15-hour, you know, at least it's not that big of a time zone.
Yes.
I mean, well, it's still going to be about, you know, 5-7 hours.
It's not too bad. Yeah.
Okay, well, back to our question. Let's listen in 7 minutes into the podcast.
Sorry, I apologize. Sorry.
No, but I mean, it's good. It's good because this really does actually, before we heard the question, it does help address some of the issues that we're going to be talking about after this. So let's listen in.
What is the greatest challenge facing the multi-ethnic church in the 21st century and given our current cultural crisis?
Now, it's interesting after Brian's question, whom I met at the Houston Church Planning Network a few months ago, that what we talked about before listening to it actually has a lot to do with it, because we talked about cross-cultural miscommunication and how that is a dynamic that we need to be aware of.
Yeah. Okay. So when he talks about the current cultural crisis, you know, we, of course, have a lot of crises, but I mean, we're right now in a season of multicultural conflict, really, nationally, right? So let's particularly maybe, and we're talking about here, incidences. And of course, you know, when this podcast airs, we don't know. I mean, we can talk about Minneapolis and Baton Rouge, and we can talk about, but then things sort of change.
Yeah, because when the question was submitted, the shootings in Dallas had recently happened, and you know, him being in the Houston area.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. So I think the one of the challenges right now is the perception of African Americans. Now, you can't speak generally, but I'm talking from a poll perspective. Okay, so I don't know what every African American thinks, but when you look at the perception of African Americans, their perception of the current issues related to systemic injustice, police brutality, and the perception of the majority culture, predominantly Anglo, is actually quite different. I mean, like 50 percentage points difference in some polls. So. And this is one of the things that I've been very desirous to address. So, because it's not just, okay, so most people listen to our podcast are going to be evangelicals. Matter of fact, statistically, most are going to be white just because that's the predominant cultural setting here. And so if that's the case, statistically, you are most likely to look at these situations and think, well, these are isolated cases. Biggest issue is black on black crime. And you're most likely to be dismissive of the claims just statistically. Now, I'm not, you know, please don't send in a letter saying, well, I'm not. Of course not. Okay, I'm not, right? So you're not. Mm-hmm. But if you're African-American, you're most likely statistically to say there's an ongoing problem with police brutality, that the only reason we're hearing more about it today is we have video cameras on our cell phones. Mm-hmm. And so for me, my desire was to ask Okay, so I mainly write and engage Christian leaders. So what I want to do was simply say, all right, why do African-American evangelicals respond differently? Because here's the deal. Most of our audience, evangelicals, are going to see some of these activists on television and just discount them because there's 50 other things that they're having an agenda. Okay. And so they're going to say, I'm not going to list these people. They're blank. Okay. But African-American evangelicals are saying very different things than Anglo or Latino or Asian evangelicals. So what I did is I did a series at the blog after Ferguson called It's Time to Listen. And I just lined up. I'm Brian Loritz, right? I mean, people, these are people who speak at the evangelical conferences, Leon Scrump. So in other words, white evangelicals listen to these African-American leaders teach the Bible. I wanted them to listen to these African-American leaders to teach them about the state of the culture.
Yeah, that's good.
I got complaint letters. I got letters to human resources at Lifeway.
Really?
It went crazy. But here's the thing. Glad I did it. Very supportive, by the way. Lifeway, very supportive. Because I think it's necessary for us to ask the question, why are African-American evangelicals, Bible-believing evangelicals, actually coming to different conclusions? And I think you should listen to that. So back to his question. Okay, so I think perhaps one of the great challenges right now is helping the church to listen to other parts of the church about how they perceive the moment that we're in.
Yeah.
And then learn and listen to one another, because an apologetic for the gospel will be when cops and African-American leaders who love Jesus are talking about real issues and how to address these issues in our culture, in our context.
Yeah.
And when churches reflect their community rather than the most segregated part of their community on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I appreciate that answer. I mean, in my opinion, I feel like there's a lot of talk that happens, and especially after what happened in Nice, France, and, you know, just it almost seems like on a daily basis, we're reading about stuff on the news, racial tensions, fighting, you know, bombings, terrorism. Just we keep on hearing about this. But when we look at especially the racial fighting, oftentimes right after Dallas happened, most of the podcasts that I listened to, the sermon podcasts, they all talked about race and justice, right? So to hear Tim Keller address it on one Sunday, to Matt Chandler address it on another, to Erwin McManus, I mean, they each addressed it that very same Sunday, but in a different way, right? And I feel like there's a lot of talk that the church in North America does. You know, we do a lot of talking, and especially after incidences like this, we'll do maybe some actions and be like, oh, let's have a prayer time for the police, or let's do this, or let's do that. But a couple weeks later, you know, a couple months later, things go back to normal.
Okay, but right? I also say too, if I can interrupt too, having a prayer time for police is good.
Yes. Okay? Oh, I'm not saying anything negative about that. I'm just saying, a couple months later, we forget about it.
There are people in your congregation who are asking, do you care about issues of injustice as well? So what I would say is, if the only time that you mention that lives matter is when you talk about police officer shootings, and you should, you know, for the record, I come from a law enforcement family. My uncle, New York City cop, my brother's one of the DAs in Charlotte. And so very much so. Okay. But I also recognize, you know, I'm teaching pastor at a church in Florida where we have, you know, we're 40% Latino, maybe 20-30% African or African-American. And when I talk about the brokenness of our society, I think I can simultaneously speak up for what I deeply care about in law enforcement as a law enforcement family. And at the same time say, man, what all good law enforcement say is there are bad cops too, and they want those bad cops out. And people, you know, something H.B. Charles tweeted. He said, you know, the Bible says we mourn with those who mourn. We don't have to tell them they shouldn't have been mourning or it was their fault. And so that's what I think we ultimately need to do. And so I think being one who speaks up for all people who are hurting, and who says that all these situations matter, and that in our culture today, I think there's a perception in the African American community that their lives often don't matter. I'm happy to say no, Black lives do matter.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important for us to say that. But I think explaining why you have to use those words, because I mean, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, you know, lives matter, but I think unborn lives matter. Mm. Well, if I say that and you say, well, no, all lives matter. Well, no, but unborn lives are the ones that are in question.
Yeah.
Well, I would say too, right now in huge swaths of our society, people are questioning, do our lives matter? Yeah. And I think that's important for us to say. So what I would say is don't, it's going to cost you something, but don't stay silent. But when you speak, make sure you speak rightly into the situation. And I'll just tell you the way we did it. I was preaching through the sermon at Christ Fellowship. It was something about, the brokenness of the world. And mm-hmm. I forget what it was. I think I was preaching on Noah. And I said, you know, the world's still broken today. Mm-hmm. And I said, you just could look at places like, you know, Minneapolis and Baton Rouge and Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I basically was saying, listen, all these things matter to us.
Yeah.
But by mentioning Minneapolis, I also say, you know, the lives of African-Americans matter, maybe yeah. sometimes in a world that doesn't perceive that it does. Again, that doesn't make you liberal, doesn't make you out there. It just means that you're saying that you care. And I think that that's important.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So, I mean, that's where preaching on it, praying over it. I mean, these things do matter and they do make a difference. But here's the one challenge that I'd want to throw out to our audience here. If you are a part of the majority culture, right? So if you are white evangelical or what I'd love for you to try doing this week is try to place yourself in the shoes of being a minority culture, right? And I feel like, so what that practically, you could go to a restaurant, maybe you and one of your friends, or maybe you by yourself, don't bring your entire small group there. Cause then you might be, you'll become more of the majority, but go to an ethnic restaurant that you've never been to, one where you go in and not one of those, like if you're going to a Chinese restaurant, don't go to Panda Express, right? Go to like an authentic Chinese restaurant where the menu is in Chinese, yeah. like in the heart of downtown,
sure.
you know, that only accepts cash, right? Go somewhere like that or to an Ethiopian restaurant or, you know, and actually go and feel what it looks like, feel what it's like to be a part of the minority culture.
That's good.
Right. Because I feel like that, you know, going back to Brian's question, what's the greatest challenge facing the multi-ethnic church? I think it's that we don't understand what the other person is sitting through and has experienced. Right. In Canada, for example, the biggest challenge is always the English and the French, which goes back to historical times. Yeah. Whereas we didn't have a Martin Luther King type of, you know, segregational movement yeah. Up in Canada. It was right. really the English and the French, and you see that come through society. So what does it look like for us to place ourselves in the other person's shoes?
It's good. It's good. Now, you lived in Montreal.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. I know much more English-speaking Canada. Mm-hmm. We know that Quebec is really, I mean, the Quebecois, the largest unreached people group in all the Americas yeah. by percentage of engagement of evangelical Christianity. Do you find, and there's always this tension within Canada, are they leaving, are they staying?
Yes.
Do you find that has racial ethnic overtones that are also problematic? I don't know enough about Canada to say that. Is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's not just political.
Oh, it's definitely race. I mean, it's racism.
Racism.
Yeah, it definitely is from the English to the French and from the French to the English. So it's not just a political thing about should they separate or should they not.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed this longer episode than normal, but it's an important issue that we wanted to highlight, that we wanted to talk through. So be sure to listen in and to also to future episodes, and also to send your questions in at newchurches.com. We'll catch you next time.